Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey everyone, big one up today. Okay, let me be fully transparent with everyone. If you're not remotely into The Sopranos, like not at all, you don't even like it, you hate The Sopranos, this may not be the episode for you. If you love, like, or have any interest in one of the great shows of all time, I think you'll really enjoy this long sit down with my friend, who is a regular character on The Sopranos. So hang out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
No. Will, hold on one second.
Hey, what the fuck, man?
By the way, Saif, I love how this happens on every episode now. It's actually becoming the new tradition. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night. Welcome to the Juan Epstein is Life podcast.
Oh, you don't hear the full Juan Epstein that often anymore, but that is true. Welcome aboard to Juan Ep is Life. And Saif, today, for the first time ever, I have my neighbor joining us on Juan Ep.
Man, I mean, listen, this podcast has gotten exponentially better, where we're just grabbing people in the hallway now to right. be on the show.
There he is, my friend and next-door neighbor, Will.
How's it going,
Will
guys?
Will Janowitz, how are you, man?
What's up,
Will?
I'm good. I don't even have shoes on. That's how close we live to each other.
Yeah.
You literally just walked over.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's funny. There's a... Will literally is the next door to me.
We share a wall.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. To just lift the curtain up completely, Will and I live so close that I'm currently badgering him to move so I can break down the wall and take his apartment. That's literally how close
it's
we
true.
Live to each other.
It's true.
Not only does he live next door, I want his actual apartment.
That's what this podcast is actually under the guise of.
Well, do you know how many jokes I already prepared to make? Because the reason Will is on the show, by the way, among other things, is that he was a star of The Sopranos, one of the great characters, Finn. And so the amount of jokes that I want to make about, you know, making you some sort of offer that you can't refuse, you know, it would be such. I said to Natalie the other day, I was like, if I knew Tony, he would just have a conversation and we could move in. Will would have to leave. That would be it.
You're saying you're trying to bribe your neighbor with a guest appearance on the Juan Ep is Life podcast.
Yes.
I didn't think about it that way, Saif, but you're right. That's a really good idea. I think after this appearance, this life-changing appearance on Juan Ep is Life.
Or if this was an episode of like your Larry David show, it would be a podcast, you know, where you kind of gaslit me into.
That's a great episode. Yeah. Where I would spend the episode being like, Saif, I'm going to have this guy on. Yeah. And I'd have Saif say certain things that would encourage you to sell the apartment.
Totally.
Anyway, so Saif and I have talked a few times about having Will, about having you on the show before. And then recently, because Natalie had never watched The Sopranos, we started it from the very beginning. And I am now, I have 5 episodes left in the series.
Wow.
The truth is, I do not remember, even though it's my third watching, I do not remember what happens with your character. I cannot recall whether you come back again. I think you do, but am I wrong?
I'm trying to think.
You guys are broken up.
Okay.
And Anthony went on and dated Blanca, and now at all the family things, Meadow's just alone. Do you come back again, or is it over?
Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, you can tell it to me. I won't tell Natalie, but you should tell me.
I'm 99% sure I don't come back. However, there's
spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Well, I asked him. I said, also, I believe that there is one episode that's coming up where there's a family event. Is she dating this that other dude yet?
She's not dating anyone yet.
Weird. Okay. There's a. Have you reached the point where she goes, I'm on with Finn, and in another room, it's like a family function, like Thanksgiving maybe, and he's like, send my regards or something, and then I think you hear my voice, or you just hear her. Has that happened?
I don't remember.
Okay, so if that happens, then I don't.
That's it.
Yeah.
And do they ever mention you again? Like, is it known how your relationship ends?
Is it known how our relationship... No, they kept it very opaque. Like, we don't know what happened. It's okay. Just... I moved back to San Diego.
Right, you moved back to San Diego. So let's start here. How did you end up doing The Sopranos? Where were you in your life at that time? Take us through the beginning of this story of being a part of one of the greatest shows of all time.
Absolutely. It was probably my second professional job. I went to this kind of prestigious acting school in North Carolina called North Carolina School of the Arts. And I like being in North Carolina. I dug some of the people, but I really just wasn't into this nerdy kind of musical theater kind of vibe. And I actually got kicked out of that school. I then traveled the country with my then girlfriend, and I came back to New York City. 9/11 was just happened or whatever. It was a weird fucking time. And then I'm there and I'm like, what am I doing? I get production jobs and I work on a couple movies, and I became Mary Louise Parker. You know that actress?
Mm-hmm, of course.
I became her personal assistant because I was always
who's that again?
From Weeds.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
I become her. I had some, you know, in with a producer, and she's like, you'll be a PA. And I was a terrible PA. And Mary Louise Parker saw me like cracking jokes with like some other crew members. And she was like, who's that guy? I want him to be my personal assistant. And it became a disaster because she used me as this blockade for production. Like, basically I became a conduit between her and the producers. Production, so she was like,
oh my god, so that's my dude.
I was a liaison.
You were a liaison, and you're a kid.
Yeah, and she was mad cool to me though, and she'd be like, here's $60, go to like Williamsburg, which was just like a, you know, shit show at that time, and go get yourself a sandwich, go bring me back something, and that was my job. And I would go and whatever. And
was this on Weeds or pre-Weeds?
This is pre-Weeds. It was a movie called, I'm forgetting. But
Shawshank Redemption.
It was called Shawshank Redemption.
I've heard of that.
It was a small film called Shawshank Redemption. And then I remember some dude who was like, when you decide, it was the production designer. He's like, because I was always just being silly. And he was like, when you decide what you're going to do, you're going to be really good at it. And I was just like, that's a backhanded compliment. and finally, I took acting seriously, got a manager, and I started getting roles. I did before Jerry Orbach died, I did a Law and Order with Jerry Orbach and Jesse Martin. And those dudes were so fucking cool. Like, OG Law and Order was like kind of a rite of passage as a New York actor. But Jerry Orbach.
Yeah, I heard Jerry Orbach was really cool.
So
on,
cool.
Back in the, on that show,
so
yeah.
cool. He was just like
some New York shit.
Hell yeah. He was like, he's an OG. Jesse Martin's an OG. Like, they were just cool cats. And then I got other jobs, but then I'll never forget. Like, I get you'd get an email, you'd print out everything, or at that time, you'd go to your agency, you'd pick it up, and it was The Sopranos. And I forget if I got the entire script. They used to sometimes, they were very secretive, so I think it was just the sides. Which means, for those listening, sides are your scene.
Your part,
exactly.
Your pages.
Exactly. And I look at it, and it just looks like, you know, fucking foreign language to me because I don't know the show, never watched it. While I was in college, while I was in college for those 2 years, the show had become a phenomenon. And then the subsequent 2 years where I was back in New York, it was starting to take off, but I just didn't watch it. My parents did. So my mother, my mom was, rest in peace. She was very, very intelligent, very, you know, just, you know, she was the best. And she, I said, "Mom, what's the deal with this show?" And she goes, "What show?" And I go, "Here." You know, I put the pages in front of her and she goes, "Sit down." She was like, "Shut the fuck up and listen to me." And she went through the whole sides, like for like a half hour, she just sat there analyzing it. She goes, "Okay, I know what's going on." And she goes, because she was watching the show. She knew the archetypes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She knew who was, you know, who was.
And who was in the original audition? What scene was it?
Well, so the scene was me at dinner. Mm-hmm. It was my first scene. Mm-hmm. It was the intro to Finn. Mm-hmm. And it was me, my friend from college, Jamie, Tony, Carmella, and Robert. Mm-hmm. That was my first scene.
Anthony Jr., yep.
Anthony Jr., sorry. And I'm, you know, I'm on a first name basis.
Of course. And by the way, this was at the apartment in the city,
yep,
where Meadow was living with a dude who was not you, right?
I don't know if they were living.
I thought that's the thing they talk about is that
she had a roommate.
She had a roommate.
Her name was Alexa Palandino, and she's a great actress.
Okay, so she had a female roommate.
Yes.
And you are there with a friend also.
Correct.
And you're the boyfriend. You're the new boyfriend.
We're all friends, new boyfriend, and I'm meeting. They're coming over for dinner at their college.
So your mom's able to explain more of the dynamic of this scene. You're meeting Tony.
Exactly. Right. So my mom was like, "You're meeting a dude who is a ruthless,
yeah,
Machiavellian, very smart, charming, scary dude." But the ultimate takeaway was scary, because you can't play the fear, but you can a little bit. And to be honest, that wasn't that hard for me. I'm good at showing my true emotions, and I was able to sort of like capitalize on that. However, now that you mention it, the truth is, I was given that role, but then I had to take the train. You take the NR or whatever, you take the 7 to, you go to Silver Cup.
Silver Cup, yeah.
Back in the day, you'd go to Silver Cup, which was kind of hallowed ground. You know, you'd fucking get off it there, you'd come down this spiral staircase, then you'd walk, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is where movies are made.
For people who don't live here, by the way, Sife, Silver Cup and Will Buddy, it's the biggest studio here, right?
Well, now it's the second biggest one of the.
Okay.
Yeah, the Brooklyn one is now, right?
Steiner. Steiner,
yeah,
which is
the one in Brooklyn Navy Yards.
Steiner Studios, yeah, okay. Yeah. And
but if you go over the, if you ever watch the show Taxi, mm-hmm, and when the cab is driving over that bridge, that's the Queensboro Bridge, the 59th Street Bridge. And when you get off that bridge, even, you know, how long you ever live in New York, you would always see the sign, Silver Cup Studios.
Yep. Right. Yep. It's right there.
You have no idea what it is.
Yeah,
it's
you have no idea.
It's just a big ass place.
That was always,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, on the Queen side of the bridge.
Which is kind of dope because it's like our little Hollywood.
It is.
It's like this, yeah. Like, yeah, and I'll never, yeah. So,
and a lot of stuff has got made there. Like, oh, it's so funny.
30 Rock.
Rock was big there, yeah.
For as much as people, you know, it's, you want to go to make movies and television, you go to LA.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, for as much as that's true, they make a lot of movies and television here as well. A lot, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Second most probably to Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Silver Cup is hopping to that.
Yeah.
Atlanta's
coming up, yeah.
Atlanta's. It's really all, now it's like tax credit shit. You know, it's just right. Where do you get
New right. Mexico is like a big deal now.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. And
but for New York, yeah, this was
Silver
like the
Cup's
spot.
A thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. And so I walk in, and that's where the callback was. So I get, you get the thing. They tell you actually. So George Ann Walken, Christopher Walken's wife, cast it.
Okay.
And George Ann goes, while I was in the first audition, she goes, I do the scene. She goes, you know, maybe you should read for the best friend. And I said, okay, whatever you want. So I read for the best friend.
Oh, because you don't know at this point what who has a longer arc.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly.
know, right?
Okay. Exactly. I don't know anything.
Fuck. So you don't even know that you could be saying, "Sure, I'll read for the thing that that guy's gone." After that.
Gone.
He's there for one scene.
So I go. So she goes, "You know what? We're gonna call you back. You're gonna come to Silver Cup next week, and you're gonna read for the best friend." And I said, "Okay, cool." And she goes, "You know, she knew that I was kind of green." She goes, "Just don't look at anybody in the eye, like when you're reading," which is kind of commonplace. Basically, she's saying you look at the reader, not the director or whomever else is in the room, producer. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Got it.
Just look at them.
Play the scene out with the person who's reading with you.
Correct.
That's it. Okay.
So I was like, cool, got it. Show up to Queens the next week, and there's a line out the door. Like a lot of people are there, and that sucks. You know, you're just as an actor, you're like, oh, I got a competition. It's gonna be my friends of mine. I see this girl. We smoke a cigarette outside, and she calmed me down. She's a talented actor who didn't wind up on the show, but had a big career after. I'm forgetting her name. I want to say Skylar, but it's not that. And we're just chilling, talking. And you go inside and you kind of like wait for your name to be called. And I saw like fucking 50 dudes.
And for the rest, it's an interesting thing, like the experience of what you just described. Because Saif, I don't know if you've auditioned for random shit too, haven't you?
It's a rough feeling, man.
Bruh, when you show
a lot of guys your description that fit your description,
right? Yeah. And when you show up. And you see there's just tons of people there. In your mind, you just naturally go, what are the odds that I get this?
Yeah.
You know, you just immediately believe less because you're like, numbers will say I literally have a 1% chance of getting this now.
And it turns into a head fuck where you're just convinced. I mean, what you got to basically do is just focus on, you got to focus on the work and what you've prepared. You know, you just have to be like, you know, and there's alchemy to the certain amount of alchemy to it. But there's also like, I knew I was a New York kid. I knew most of these people are some jabronis from fucking like, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? Just do your thing. I go in. Eventually they call me and there's quite a few people in the room and they're like, okay, let's do the scene. I do the scene as the best friend. And they go, you know, would you go outside and prepare the boyfriend, Finn, after I did it?
Okay.
I go, okay, cool. So I prepare it. I remembered that I had looked at it before because that was the original role. And then I come in. I do it again. He gave me.
You can read the script though. You're reading. You don't have to memorize it.
No, they gave me script. I already kind of was pretty familiar with it because of the first time I did it.
Right. Okay. Got it.
And so, I come back in, I do it, and the guy, James Heyman, who was the director, was like, give me a little note. I took it. I left. And then I go home, and my mom's like, how'd it go? And I was like, I think it went well. I don't know. Time goes by. Like, 2 weeks later, I haven't heard anything. And I call my manager, and I'm like, yo, like, did you ever hear anything about this? He goes, no one told you? He's like, we just found out. You got it. I was God, what? That's He's crazy. Like, the boyfriend. And I was like,
oh, so you don't even know which part you got?
No. I didn't know. And they fucking told me, man. And like, it really made me happy because especially after being like kicked out of school, which was harsh, you know, that's tough. Like, I had to do it again, I wouldn't have gone to college at the time I did. Like, I just wouldn't have. I felt too young and I felt too like vulnerable and like I should have just like traveled or worked on a fucking, you know, whatever. Just
so
even the PA stuff would have been better. Like
exactly.
At that time. You
know? Right.
Yep.
So now you have it.
I get the role.
And hold on. So that means that at some point, the first scene you ever do here is going to be a dinner scene with Tony
100%.
And Carmella.
Yeah.
So
that was my
what's
first
that like
scene.
Like? What's that situation?
So I get to set. I get, now I'm back at Silver Cup, and it's funny, like, by the way, still haven't seen the show.
Oh, you still hadn't gotten a chance to watch it?
I just consciously was like, I'm not watching it.
You didn't want to overthink it?
Yeah, okay. I just didn't want to overthink it.
You're just playing the girl's boyfriend, and you got to meet the dad.
Exactly.
Like, you don't need to know all the other shit, because think about it, in real life, when you meet a girl, you have no idea what
you don't know every
does,
detail of her dad.
Totally. Yeah. I know I would have wound up doing some bullshit. Like I would have made
Hey Tony, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, you know, some Or I just would have been like, I would have tried to act tough maybe, or like, or tougher, or do would have thrown me. I was like, I know my job. There were two fear things that were going on. I had a lot of girlfriends up until that point. I love, you know,
ladies.
Yeah,
sure.
So, but that was one thing that freaked me the fuck out, maybe more than Tony, was having to be with a woman on screen. In a way where it was like, oh, I got to be your boyfriend. Like, I've never had to do this.
Oh,
like,
you've never done a romantic thing?
I had never done
that.
Yeah. No. And it was scary as fuck. Like,
how old are you at this time?
23 or something, like 22.
Right, right.
And like touching her, like, I was like, yo, is this okay? Like, I was like, I was kind of like just shook by that aspect. So that added to my tension. Where I was like, oh, right. And it probably worked too. But anyway, I'll back it up. So I walk into Silver Cup, and the only poster of The Sopranos that's up is hanging over the dude who sits there to check you in.
Okay.
It was like kind of a ghetto setup.
Okay.
Then. And it was this dude who became a friend, who was like the OG kind of like security guy for the stages. And he checks me in. He's like, he looks up. He's like, your first time? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you're going to be great. Like, he had this little shtick down. But the poster above the wall was Tony in the middle, one family, biological family on the right side, and then his crew on the left. Mm-hmm. And it goes,
I love that poster.
Yeah, and then the tag was, if one family doesn't kill him, the other one will.
Yep.
And it's a dope poster. And I'm like, yo, I'm here. I get changed. They sit you in your room for, like, a really long time. Oh, by the way, pre this, I probably had done a table reading.
Okay.
I'm skipping that.
And so you had met everyone.
Yes.
Okay.
So that made it cool and a little bit scarier too, though, because then you're like, oh, now I'm seeing how much hype these people have. I'm seeing how, like, oh, they're stars already. And I'm walking I'm walking in, and I'm like looking at all of them, and I'm taking each of the archetypes in. I still haven't read the script. I don't know what the show's about.
Right.
Ostensibly, you know, I really don't know. And I'm taking them all in. Jamie was very cool to me. Jamie has played Meadow. Robert played AJ. Very cool to me. The vibe was great. I go on set. And yeah, man, like that was the first. I had been on a set where the stage is built out. But when I walked on Sopranos, I was like, oh, wait, this is a big show where.
Each, this is what the set is. Meadows,
the set is Meadows apartment.
And it's all a set.
Yep.
It's,
yep. It's, well, okay. So here's an interesting fact is that at this time, which was season 4, they still shot Tony's house in Caldwell, New Jersey, at a dude who had that house. And they rented it, and they were renting it. They would pay a lot of money. But that dude started getting big-headed and started trying to overcharge them. They then built...
the same thing.
The same exact fucking set. To a T. So a lot of the time, what you saw when you thought you were watching the interior of Caldwell was that. And I think it started on season 4. So I saw...
The original seasons was a house in Jersey.
Correct.
And then they recreated it and put it in.
But then
the interior.
The
interior. Yeah.
But if post season 4 they had stuff to do outside the house,
they would still go
they'd
back.
Still have to go rent it for that day to just go outside for that scene.
Exactly.
Wow, that's crazy. That's wild just to think about. Okay.
So I would walk in and I'm pretty sure I at that point they had already built it. And so I got to see that. I got to see other stuff. I was just kind of like walking around, like just taking shit in, dude. You're like looking around. I mean, imagine this now, right? Like, first of all, there was no social media. There was no Facebook. There was no Instagram. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think there was Facebook. Maybe they're like early nascent.
It was very beginning.
So
it was like MySpace.
Right.
And I should say, David Chase at every table read would stand up and he'd go, thank you guys for being here. I hope you know how special it is that you are all here. And dope. I want you to know that this is a very secretive show, and it's very important to me and the fabric of this show that you don't share any of this information with the media. Because at that point, there were shady cats trying to, you know, the Post mainly.
Yeah, trying to get in. Post wants to leak shit from the show.
Totally.
Right.
I guess they still have that.
Well, bro, listen, it's funny that you bring that up. Totally different. Half of the wrestling world is people leaking. That's the whole. And I always, Sife, you and I have never talked about this, but you would appreciate this so much because you're always so grateful to do things that are cool. When I'm at WWE, I've never told anyone shit, right? Like, if it's a real secret, I don't even tell Dipperstein. I tell nobody. If it's if it's real shit. And when people get the jobs and leak shit, I'm like, you dreamed about being here. Yeah. And now you leak it?
Yeah.
Like,
I guess they pay you. I don't know.
Me? I don't know. Yeah. Or is it just
they used to pay. Apparently, I heard some dude who worked on the show, actually, it was probably a legitimate person who said people were making a lot of money. Ugh. I mean, we could do a whole podcast about the side hustles that that cats were doing for The Sopranos.
Oh, you mean they were making a lot of money to leak information?
Other
shit too.
Other weird shit. Like,
Of course.
Getting shit from the set.
Mostly appearances.
Appearance.
So it wasn't shady, but it was like their own thing.
Right.
Side hustle.
Which I got. But, we can get to that later. But
which, by the way, is perfect for The Sopranos because everyone does have a side hustle.
Yeah. So they
but it's crazy because that speech David Chase was giving was to the new people, which is you.
Yes. Right. That you was know, for like, you.
Yes.
That I hope. Was,
he's like, hey guys, if you just joined the cast or if you just have one
totally
role, hey, everybody here knows we're family. We keep it quiet. Yes. So that was right.
Right, that's right for you. Yes. That wasn't for Gandolfini.
Yeah. He didn't. It was that. For me and everybody else and who was new on people. That day. Yep.
Yeah, the best friend that was there too.
Right.
And
wow, that's cool.
Oh, dude, it was so cool and it was addictive because so then I did the day. The day was nerve-wracking. There was some. I had some. You know, I deal with anxiety, and I later in my life I realized it was a real thing. And I now manage it. But when I was younger, I would do things or I would know. I would just know I don't feel, quote unquote, like I wouldn't feel in my body sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And to talk about not feeling in your body, there were moments where I was having fucking out-of-body experiences where I'm like, yo, I'm literally like it felt like on one of, like, remember that scene in the Oliver Stone movie where it turns into in Natural Born Killers, where it turns into that fake Rodney Dangerfield's, like,
So weird.
It kind of felt like that at points where I was like, I'm just a character on The Sopranos. Like they just pushed me onto the set and, like, you're this weird guy and, like, And then that went on for quite a while because I knew that this show was such a thing eventually, and their characters were so, they sat in them. Like, when you met Tony, it was like, oh, this dude is he's in character. He is this guy.
Yeah.
When you meet Carmella, she's that person. And I was like, yo, I'm a bad actor. And but actually I get, and I'm not sweating myself, but I got a lot of compliments on how I handled it. And I found that interesting because a lot of the time in my head, I went, I don't feel like.
Well, you had to have imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I had imposter syndrome.
Right. Yeah. How could you not? And I think one of the funny parts about The Sopranos is that it's literally filled with the best actors ever, but then they have scenes where they rub up against, all due respect, you may know the guy, I'm sorry, Jackie Jr. And there's scenes where you're like, this is a terrible actor in a scene with the best actor in the world. So it's a unique show in that regard. So I can certainly understand why you'd be like, I fit? And then you have other people. So you have theatrical, real deal actors who are dead serious, like Edie Falco.
Yeah.
But then you have guys like Syl.
Yeah.
who's great.
Who takes it seriously.
And takes it seriously, yeah. But he also wasn't a real actor prior to
that. Yeah, yeah.
By the way, you know what? You know,
Which one's Sill?
Sill is
Silvio Dante.
Silvio is
from the
E Street Band.
Right.
But so
with the bandana.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, he's literally a whole different character in his actual life.
Yeah.
So if you know what Natalie said today that I thought was slightly profound when we were watching, she was like, "I feel like Shawnee Culture is like the Silvio of your group at work." I was like, that's actually exactly right.
Is Natalie Italian? Crazy.
No, Natalie's Israeli.
Oh, shit.
But she nailed it. Because,
same shit. I mean, there's a little of that.
Because she knows Sill was always chill. Sill was never, Paulie was a wild boy. Sill was the one who was always like, let's take a step back. And Tony would always go, what? Because he knows Sill was thinking, is that really the best thing to do here? All right, so. Yeah.
So I do that day and I'll never forget. I was high as fuck after, like just on life.
Right.
And we get done. But my friend Evan Newman, who I grew up with, winds up playing the fucking best friend.
Wow. Okay.
We went to Hebrew school together when we were little kids.
Okay.
My mom goes, "How did it go?" I go home. I'm living at home at this time. She goes, "How did it go?" And I was like, "It went great. And like this happened and this happened." And like, yeah, the best friend said that he knew me, like the kid who played the best friend. And she goes, "Who was it? What's his name?" And I was like, "Evan Newman." She's like, "Oh my God, you wanted to be his best friend growing up. Like you went to Hebrew school with him." And I'm like, "Stop." And anyway, and then Evan and I reconnected after that. But Evan had a fucking hard day because we get to the scene around dinner and...
Literally, you mean around dinner time in the day?
In the show.
In the show, it's dinner. Yeah. Yes, correct. Right.
And we're there, and his character has a thing about Billy Budd.
It's a phenomenal. Saif, I don't know if you remember the scene. Obviously, you haven't watched recently, so I'll jog you on it. The scene is Carmella gets hung up in this argument with Meadow and her friends about whether this character is gay.
Totally.
And the kids... And by the way, this is one of the underrated...
What character?
The character's Billy Budd? Is that what's the character that they're arguing about?
Billy Budd.
That's the character.
Whether or not...
Billy Budd is gay.
Yep.
And what's
Billy Budd's on the show?
No.
He's a historical... He's from... what's the book?
What's the book? They're arguing about a book.
Billy Budd.
Okay.
So Carmella had read this book. It's a famous book.
Yeah,
and I apologize for being ignorant. The kids had read the book. And again, this is something I think The Sopranos doesn't get its due credit for, is that they were incredibly forward-thinking in these progressive conversations before it was required to have a TV show.
Well, now you're hitting on something that I've been fascinated with. I mean, 100%. I mean, I was talking to Crystal, my wife. We were watching All in the Family.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Great example.
Great example.
The ultimate example.
Right. Where, like... It is woke in a way. Like that show is woke.
It's post, right?
Because you got a dad who's like quasi racist. He's
quasi.
He is.
Sorry, full blown.
Full blown, but he's willing to like. His kids are that tuning fork, or he's the tuning fork that everything radiates from. But the kids will check the dad, and then correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes he will be like, "You're right." Right? Or am I wrong?
Did Archie Bunker sometimes...
Because Archie Bunker was New York.
Yes.
Old school New
Queens,
York
yes.
racist, not Ku Klux Klan
racist. Yeah. Exactly.
Which, if I say that to a white woke girl, it's no different.
Yes. Yes.
But we know there is a difference.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
He works with black people. His neighbors are black. Sometimes he says some off-color shit, but also he has black friends.
100%.
It's not like you're like a southerner in the Klan and you're like, "We're going to kill black people." You're just like, kind of like racist.
100%.
It is different. It is
different. But Tony was the same way.
Well, that's...
I was just about to say, right. Tony was the exact same way.
And unfortunately, I mean, you guys probably seen this, or Imperioli, who played Christopher, has become, you know, is one of my best friends and just a special person in my life. And he is an incredible dude. And, you know, Michael just discovered Instagram like 3 years ago, and now he's like on Instagram all the time.
I need to follow Michael. Yeah.
His Instagram's funny, but Michael's a Buddhist, and he also engages with his fans. I think he has since kind of laid off it. But the funny thing is, and what you come to realize, we're talking about some like heavy shit, but like, so I believe there's a contingent of people who watch that show who are probably racist, who have been racist, who are just watching the show on one level. And then there are people who get all the minutia of the show and the nuances.
Of course.
Of it, you know, and so I don't think, you know, and the irony is I don't think you could watch, I actually don't think you would watch All in the Family and be able to, like, All in the Family is one thing. Like, you can't, I don't think you could just watch it and be like, he's racist, I like that. Do you know what I mean?
It would be hard.
It'd be
right.
hard.
It would be hard because he looks stupid. And
yes.
so to not realize that you're wrong
exactly.
when you're watching it would be harder. Whereas if you were, let's say, someone who just loved the Tony character and you're not thinking, you just think when Meadows complaining about how they're not progressive at all, you think Meadows annoying
exactly.
and they're right.
Exactly.
But the truth is, I'm sorry to be this blunt, anyone with a brain in their head knows that what the show was saying is that Tony and Carmella were really flawed and Meadow ideologically was the smart one.
Totally.
She was educated.
Totally.
She was becoming a better version.
Yeah, but I know a lot of old school Italian guys that are like, oh, this girl's, she's awful whack. She's going to college and getting all these bright ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's like,
and they would, and they could watch that and take it just through that.
Totally.
But like I had this conversation with someone recently. I said, you know, a lot of shows about the mob involve racism, but the racism is happenstance. It's there. You hear them say
the N word, or
the M word in Italian,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you hear that, and you go, "Oh, that's gross." In The Sopranos, it's not happenstance.
No.
Race is a big part of the show.
100%.
I mean, Tony's bout with racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia, all of it is like really part of his story. Sorry, Saif, go ahead.
No, I'll say one of my favorite scenes, I believe, is Tony's mom. I think it's a flashback when he was younger. And she's like, "You're hanging out with those N-words on Bloomfield Avenue." And I was like, yeah, if you're a kid from Jersey, Italian kid from Jersey, you hung out with all types of kids.
Yep.
You know? But she like yelled at him, like, and I remember that scene so well. It's so funny.
Well, and she's probably like, also like, you know, sorry to step on you, but like she's probably also like, I mean, you know that we all grew up in and around New York, but like there were fucking gangs. There were Italian gangs that like if you were black or Latino, you couldn't cross, you know, fucking whatever street. And you'd get fucked up. You know, it's not, you know, baseball bats and brass knuckle shit, but that's what she's pointing out is what the show was able to do, because she's like, your other friends aren't doing that. You're doing that, you know. Yeah.
It's a really awesome part of that show, man.
Oh, dude, it's hard for me. Sometimes it's hard for me to watch because it's so it evokes a time that I enjoyed so much that it's a little hard. I haven't had, I'm never going to have that experience again. That's okay. I'm not going to, it was so special on so many levels. Obviously I was younger and I'm sure like there was bureaucracy that I would have, maybe would have been different if I was like a regular on the show or whatever. But even Jamie and Robert, who I still see, like, those people are a part of my life forever, and like I love them. And Michael, like, it's just it was like family. And RIP Jim, he was a very kind dude to me too. Like,
so tell us a little bit about your relationship with Jim, and then you also have to tell Cypher the story that you told me because it was tremendous.
Which one?
The club.
Oh, the club. I forgot if I told you that.
Did.
Yeah. Okay.
It was,
yeah.
It was, actually, Cypher will love this story.
He'll get it. All right, so my relationship with Jim was that of, he kind of was always in character in the sense that he knew, he treated me as though I was one of his kids in a way, even though I was just adjacent to them.
Right.
He was extremely kind. He was funny. He was, I could tell he was a sensitive dude, but he didn't, it didn't present that way. He didn't talk about that.
What did
of
he
thing.
Sound like to talk to in regular
he did
conversation?
Not sound, he always actually sounded like Tony.
He
but
did.
But it's not how he talked in real life. That's not his real...
But it's how he talked on set?
Yes.
Oh, you mean like the tone?
The Tony that we know with like that sort of... it's very hard to do.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
That little...
And he got kind of like a list. Like there's
a little nasal.
Yeah. That thing... He kept up most of the time that on set.
Wow.
And I'm pretty, cool. While he wasn't, his acting teacher could probably tell you more, but while he wasn't necessarily method, I do think he had method instincts, which I kind of relate to in my act. Like I get what he's doing, which was, it's a lot to do. Why not do it all the time? Versus,
yeah.
Because his character, as you know, it had a lot going on, even though it felt very real. And he would do things to stay in character, because I think he'd prefer that than to not, you know?
It's just easier at
that
point.
It's just easier. And so a lot of the time he was in character, he'd crack a joke or two up until the point where it was clear that we were rolling. Then he would stay in character. We had a thing. I've told this story before, but I'll tell you guys. Like when we're at the old Homestead Steakhouse. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is part of the story. We're at the old Homestead Steakhouse. It's the scene where my character tries to buy dinner after.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I.
Sife, do you remember that?
Kinda.
We go out to
family dinner.
Family dinner. Carmela's not there. Mm-hmm. Tony's in town, like in the city for some reason, and he's like, let's go to the steakhouse. And we're just having this like meal with where he's kind of meeting me a little bit more. AJ's there, Meadow's there, whatever. And he's probably dealing with something stressful, as he's wont to do. And I'm just like, you know, we're having this meal, and the thing that started the off camera shenanigans was on camera. AJ's supposed to be like, I'm going to summer camp this summer, and like, I don't know about how I feel about it. And I'm supposed to lean over and was like, you know, I've done summer camp. You can still have fun or something like that. And I got in, it was a late night, and I started that laughing about the idea of like, what does that mean? Like, what the fuck am I saying? Like, you know, one of those moments, like, am I saying you can like fool around? Like, it just got like, you know, kind of homoerotic in my brain, and I thought it was funny. And then I shared that information with Robert, like, what do I mean by that? You know? And we started laughing, not at the idea that, you know, being gay is a problem, just that it was like,
what does this mean?
And Robert starts cracking up. We all start busting. And we're like, and I'm ruining takes. And this is a time where we shot on film.
Yeah.
It's still 35 millimeter. And I'm like kind of fucking up takes because I keep cracking up at when I have to say that line. And Jim goes, he goes stone, like face goes stone cold. And he reaches across the table and he like grabs my nose. And he goes, if you keep that up, I'm going to rip it off and shove it up your ass. Like, no, not joking. And I was like, whoa. I was like, is he serious? Like, and I just button up and I'm like, okay. We get the scene done, and through the course of the night, it was very hot. You have to turn off
the AC because of the sound.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So we turn it off, and he sweats a lot, and I actually sweat a lot too when the lights are on. And the wardrobe would give us these little fans, like tiny little fans. They did nothing, but you would hold it on your face to stop sweating. So we finish the night. It's like probably 12 a.m. and it's midnight, and Jamie, Meadow, and Robert are like, hey, yo, we're going out. You want to go out with us? And this is the first time they've invited me to do anything. And I'm like, what do you mean go out? Like, what do you get some drinks? And they're like, we're going to go to a club. And I'm like, all right, cool. So we go to...
So funny.
Yeah. We go to Sway or Suede. One of these places back in the day.
Both of those were clubs.
Right.
So which
right.
one was it?
It was the one in Meatpacking District that was really fucking small.
Yeah, Suede.
Okay, it was Suede. And it gets pretty wild. So we go there and I didn't know Tony's going. I didn't know Jim's going. And so we get in a car. It goes like five blocks. We get in a limo And
yeah, it's like literally right around
the corner. Yeah. We get in a limo or we walk, I forget. And we get in there and doors open, bottles pop, fucking people are just, their heads are turning. And we sit at a table that's like, I don't know if you remember, but there's like really low glass tables, like very uncomfortably low where you'd hit your shin or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got there, there's bottles down and people are coming around and I'm there. And like, I'm with the crew. It's like me, Robert, Jamie, and Tony. And Tony's like, you know, he's my age now probably, but he's like over, you know,
he's
30 years older
than probably.
Yeah, he's like 30. He's 35 years older or whatever.
20
than,
years
than
older.
Everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 20 years. Thank you. And he's just drinking, smoking, whatever. And this girl comes up to me and she's kind of chatting me up, clearly wants to be part of our thing. And I'm like, you know, just entertain. It's fun. And she reaches down for a drink. To grab the bottle of like Sky Vodka or whatever, and she's gonna pour herself a drink, and it's such a far reach because the tables are so low and she's in high heels, her fucking heels go out from under her and she fucking obliterates the whole table,
just
everything is gone. I'm trying to help her like get up and she's just like swimming like a fish on the table, and I look up and they're gone. They're already at another table across the room laughing at me, calling me over while this girl's just like destroyed this fucking table.
What? They're gone already?
Yeah, they're gone. They got another table set up immediately.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I tell this girl, I'm like, yo, you got to like, you know, chill or whatever. I go over to them and we just like hang the rest of the night and just drink and whatever. And it's getting late and I'm going to go. Wow. And I don't see Tony. So I don't see Jim. I say goodbye to the guys, and I go, and I see Jim is at the bar, and he's like shouldered up for another drink, and he's the biggest guy there. So I tap on his shoulder, and I go, "Hey, Jim, I just want to thank you for tonight. Like, I don't know if you know how much this means, and I just want to say I appreciate it for everything." And he turns to me, very serious, and he goes, "Will, you're a fantastic actor," he goes, "but you got to quit it with this fan stuff." And I go,
"Oh shit!"
And I'm like, "What?" It's like, "What the fuck is he talking about?" Like, I was so confused. Yeah. And I get in the cab. I take a cab home, and I go home. And the rest of the night, I'm like, "What did he mean?" And so, over the years, I've asked people, "What did he mean by this?" And eventually, I formed my own view. But it was that I had told Peter that, and I told, I actually asked Jamie and Robert when I was on their podcast. And it's funny because everybody else understands, has a very clear, distinct, you know.
Right, faster than you did.
Than I did, yeah.
Saif, how do you take the story?
I don't know. Like, are you being too appreciative, saying thank you too much, or was he fucking with you?
Well, so it's funny because I think he originally, I thought he was just like, and this is weird. Remember how I said those little fans for us sweating, you know? And I thought he's like
telling you about the fans,
not specific, but there was meaning behind the little fan, which actually deals in the same space with what other people's view of this story is. But I was like, oh, he's like, if you're sweating, don't ask for the little fan. Just be a boss. Like, don't be a bitch.
Wait, what
like,
did he say again?
He said to me, "Will, you're a tremendous actor, but you got to quit it with this fan stuff." And
oh fuck, what is that?
Well, I talked to, you know, Peter said the same thing they did.
No, I'm Saif. I know you know what he meant, Saif.
And he did. He said it. Saif said it. He said it, which was like, you're basically. He was to what Jim was saying in not so many words was, "You're part of this family already. Stop acting like you're on the outside.
Right.
Stop acting like family."
That's right.
Or
stop
fans.
Acting
but
like
this
fans.
Was still very early though, right? It was still very early.
Very early.
You
that's
hadn't
why
done
I
that
was
much stuff with
no,
him.
I hadn't done that much at all. That's why I was confused. That's why I didn't. That's why I yeah. didn't. Who would think that I'm family? I'm been here 2 days. I've done 2 days of work or whatever, you know. And right. That's the kind of guy he was, though. If you know, mm-hmm, when you mm-hmm. read between the lines, like, and A lot of them were like that. Michael was like that. They were all like that. And
did it hurt when he said it?
It did actually kind of hurt, because I was like, oh, I did something wrong.
It was the opposite.
It was actually the opposite. If I had been a little more mature and a little less insecure, I would have been like, oh, this dude's actually telling me I already view you as a friend, or as somebody less than, you know, just some dude who comes, you know.
But you're a colleague.
You're a colleague.
So really.
But that's the fucked up thing about acting and this stupid business, too, it's all fucked up. Look at how, like, in any other, maybe other, you know, businesses would be like that. But if you're, like, playing basketball and you got a new player on the team, one would hope that the kid who comes.
That happens there, too.
It does happen, I'm sure. It has to. Look at the Russell Westbrook shit and, like, it's like all of it.
So
he was telling you, hey, when you walk out of the club, like, tap him on the shoulder, Jim, I'm out, thanks for everything.
Exactly.
Not like, hey, I really appreciate it. Me all day.
Exactly.
I'm like, thank you so much for having me.
That is you, Syfe. Like, that is you.
You being here, you've been accepted.
Exactly.
Now just be cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
just
now,
like,
you're just cool.
Just shut the fuck up.
But that's how I am, though, man. I like to show I'm appreciative.
Me too.
What? I feel a lot of people. I think the guys like Jim, Tony Soprano, whatever, James Gandolfini, guys like that, they don't get it enough.
Yes.
So that when they do get it, it feels awkward to them.
Yes.
But my shit is like, I have to let you know how appreciative I am. I'm not trying to make it awkward, but like, I don't think enough people do let
me know. I agree. I do.
I've learned how to say it in not such a a fan way, like you're saying. Like,
no, but we live in a society that we're saying the same thing. I 100%, and I think he did appreciate it. I just think he's
like, enough. You don't
exactly.
need to. Well, it's like anytime someone's telling you, you're thanking them, and they say no, thank you. You know, don't thank me. You don't need to. That's
and
all
he's getting a lot of fake versions of that probably.
All the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
And here I am trying to give an authentic thing. And he's like, you know what? For me, it's all good.
And it's funny because you're not even a fan, because you never even watched the show.
Yeah. Right. I became, you know what I mean? What's funny is there was a little moment where I didn't get big headed, but all of a sudden I realized, oh shit, this is, I still didn't like, it was the biggest show, and I'll give you the example. It was the biggest show in the world.
Yes,
of course. And I didn't realize that. Well, you could argue like Law and Order actually did better numbers probably, but in the sense—
it's not about the numbers.
It's not about
the numbers. It's cultural impact.
Cultural,
it's
exactly.
HBO, yeah.
So one day when my big veto thing was about to air—
Phineas,
my boy— When that was about to go down, Eileen Landris, who was one of the prolific producers on the show, she pulled me aside, just kind of anecdotally, was like, you know, just like, Will, you know, they're releasing your big episode tomorrow, and she's just like, I'm letting you know everything's going to be different on Monday.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
Wow.
Like that's how stupid and kind of just I wasn't thinking about. Imagine today somebody goes, Will, your giant or your big arc is going to be on Monday. I'd be on Instagram, like, you know, I'd be on Twitter, whatever the fuck. Like, that's where my brain would be probably now, which is kind of unfortunate, but like, whatever. So I had none of that. I'm keeping secrets. Like, my friends, we're at the bar, and my friends are huge fans, right?
Yeah.
And they're, like, kind of heated at me because, like, they're just jealous in general, and I'm, like, trying to be as chill about it
as possible.
Right,
and you kind of come off like a dick when you're like, no, I can't share anything.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not blowing this
and
to tell
didn't
you
want
a fucking
me,
story.
And they didn't
come on,
want
just
me.
Tell us.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I had a couple friends who would be like, if you tell me, I'm going to kill you kind of stuff.
Right.
So Monday, I have to go downtown for something.
Wait, what's the scene? What's the big scene?
This was the blowjob at the...
this is when you saw the blowjob.
Yeah. Okay. And...
Well, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
He sees Vito sucking the guy's dick in the car.
Yeah, right.
Yep. That whole thing. Okay, and then,
I forgot that was Finn. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think he's going to kill me, all that shit. I get on the C train to go downtown. And I had known that Sunday.
This is on Monday.
This is Monday morning. I get on the C train. It's not super crowded because it was probably like around noon. And all of a sudden, I start to notice people's eyes on me. And they start, heads start turning. People, and their faces were weird. Like, they're trying to figure this out. And I'm like, the whole day, like, avalanche. And, like, more and more. And I'm like, oh, my God, she was right.
Like, she told you.
She told me. And it was cool and weird. And I was just like, wow. Like, that's... And I'm not somebody who like chases fame or anything, but it was just really interesting to watch.
She knew what was going to happen, but it's also very hard to explain.
Totally.
Right. And now
and there's not one specific thing that's going to happen.
Exactly.
Just a lot of those things. And that was when it was appointment television. You know what I mean?
Where, that was still
everyone saw it.
Yeah.
That moment. Not like now where it's all
exactly.
on demand.
So like people were exactly. Yo, and the crazy thing is like now with COVID, like all these kids, I probably look different. My hair's shorter. I definitely look different, but my hair's shorter and I'll still get it from kids. But because
Sopranos,
I think it
Sopranos is all over TikTok.
Oh, really? That's hilarious.
All like Sopranos must be. There must be like a crazy resurgence of Sopranos right now.
Yeah,
there's scenes on just random scenes on TikTok all the time.
Hilarious. Really?
There's the one that I love where it's me coming out of the you know, remember where I opened the door
out of
the latrine and he's right there.
Yeah, of course.
So people, have you seen the one where people are putting in the background? It's on some Star Wars ship behind him, like laser beams, and you know, straight up, like they're fighting like an intergalactic war behind him.
Behind Vito?
Yo, it's so dope. Yeah, it's sick. It's sick.
So then I want to ask you, what is it like? So the series ends, and you were a part of one of the biggest television shows of all time, one of the best television shows of all time. You're a major part, like you have a major part of it, but you're not one of the main stars of it either.
No.
So like you also can live your life mostly in anonymity.
Yeah.
But when people hear that you were on it, like I guess what I'm asking you is this. Is it clear to you that professionally being a part of that show, even if you do things that you're more a part of and you direct and you produce,
sure.
Have you already reconciled in your mind that this will likely be the greatest thing you've ever been a part of?
What? Look at these profound questions.
I mean, come on. Like, it's because I think about that sometimes.
I think it would be a... I mean, look, on a certain level, of course, I understand that. It's very hard to... I think it would be a misstep to live your life like that, obviously. Mm-hmm.
But is it one of the prides of your life that you're part of it?
Oh, 100%. But I, as an artist and as a creative, like that's not my journey. You know,
you don't want that to be the entire journey. Of course not.
No, of course. So, but yes, I am aware for me, it's actually artistically. Sometimes I look at stuff out there and I'm like, man, like everything is just trying to be a version of what I know this was. And that's hard. And so like a lot of my, you know, and then on a personal level, when that ended, it did feel a little bit like a death. Mm. It did feel like a little bit of a death. But then years passed and I see those people and they've become my friends and colleagues. And I'm like, I mean, sure, I'm sure you can relate too in your what you do with WWE in a weird way. It's like you've worked and lived and existed in this world in a profound way, and have had incredible highs and maybe not lows, but like
some
just and then you look back and you're like, wait a second, I'm a part of it still. Like it's all still. Part of this process and this growth that we, you know, whatever we call life. But yeah, like definitely. The fact that Jim died made it extra sad. Yeah, and
I was thinking that.
Sad and depressing for a while. And then I actually think it brought people closer together, too.
I'm sure.
Certain cast members are closer than others. That's just how it's always going to be. I'm very fortunate, I think, with the people that I am friends with. I don't get to see like Robert and Jamie as much as I would like because she's in Texas and he's in L.A. But Michael's right here. And
yeah.
Like, you know, that's just, it's special. It's special. And I think they feel the same, man. Like, that's what makes me feel better. It's hard because I was always an outsider. Then I'm like another, but it's, you know, it's all the same. It's all this thing. I feel so fortunate. I learned so much. And I had so much more to go. Now, being that young and being on something that dope was tough. Is tough when you're like, oh, then I have other things to do. I've got more. Right.
And it sucks because you're not able. Think about it like this. At this stage of your career, if you were to get a gig as impactful somehow as The Sopranos, the level of appreciation you'd have for it with the 20 years of experience in the industry, you had barely even sniffed. You hadn't suffered yet.
Yeah.
You were 25. Yeah. What, 23?
23.
You hadn't suffered shit yet.
Yeah.
And you just fucking landed this.
Yeah.
So, like, imagine the actors there. What's Paulie's, what's the actor who played Paulie's name again?
Tony Sirico. Tony was hustling for a long
time. Tony Sirico was grinding and gets his defining role at what, 60?
Yep. Yep. Or a little younger.
Paulie was 60?
No, I think he was a little younger. It's funny. It's hard to tell how old that guy is.
I'll tell you.
How old is
Tony Sirico?
70 something.
On his IMDb. He's born July 29th, 42. So in that.
Wow.
He was in his late 50s. Yeah. Or almost 60.
92. Yep.
He's so fucking good.
Go, almost 60. 60. Well, it started in 99, right? So he was 57 years old when this thing started. Okay, let's go. Okay, first of all, I have to ask you about this scene. All right, let's, you know what we got to do here? It's been a great episode, but let's continue the rest on Patreon.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.